From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
I, Gerald R. Ford, do grant.
The other passengers very reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused.
The young man makes up his mind to work. There's no limit to what he can do.
This is truly the next chapter in General Motors' recovery and turnaround.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
It's time to talk our state's history with this new segment produced in partnership with the Michigan History Center. Freedom. That's all Thornton Blackburn and his wife Lucy wanted when they came to Detroit in 1831. The African-American couple came to what was then still Michigan territory to escape the inhumane but legal institution of slavery in Kentucky. Little did the couple know, but their escape to Detroit was just a prelude to a bigger story, a story that would impact tens of thousands in the future. With us now to discuss the life and times of Thornton Blackburn are the Michigan History Center's Mark Harvey and, from Toronto, historian, archaeologist Carolyn Smards Frost. She's the author of I've Got a Home in Glory Land, A Lost Tale of the Underground Railroad. Welcome to both of you.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
And Carolyn, I think we all kind of have this popular image of the Underground Railroad with a support system of sympathizers and hiding places that was well set up to help fugitive slaves get out of the South. But that wasn't always the case, was it?
No, we know now that at least half the people who fled had no help whatsoever, or perhaps only the chance kindness of a stranger or two along the way. But the Blackburns' escape was extremely well planned. They were not owned by the same people, and she had just been sold away, and she was destined for the fancy girl markets in New Orleans, which were effectively sexual slavery. And her husband and she, 11 days after the sale, but before she had been shipped away, dressed in their very finest clothes and went to the dockyards armed with forged freedom papers. And they talked their way onto a steamboat, the Versailles, Versailles, as it is pronounced in Kentucky, and they to spend a night and a day pretending to be free people on that steamboat until they landed in Cincinnati. And there's bits of this story you couldn't make up if you tried. They landed on the 4th of July, 1831, on free soil.
And then made their way to Detroit, and they spend 2 years here. What happened in 1833, when things certainly took a turn for the worse for the Blackburns?
There was a law on the books, a territorial law, because Michigan was still a territory at that point. And it actually required that people of color be registered. There was all these prescriptive laws. They had to be registered on a list and have surety bonds taken on them for good behavior. They weren't enforced. So basically the law caught up with them. There was paperwork that was filed in Kentucky to return both of them to their former master, and they pursued them and were tipped off that they were in Detroit.
Having those headhunters just a step behind, the pressure of that day-to-day, Carolyn, must have been just indescribable.
Oh, absolutely. And in the Blackburns' case, it was sheer bad luck, because one of the people that Thornton had worked with back in Louisville saw him on the street in Detroit and went home to Louisville and told. It's a tragic story in so many ways, although they were very lucky in the way things turned out.
Yeah, before we get to that, though, they were arrested, right, Mark?
They were. They were arrested and incarcerated.
And so how did locals respond to that?
Not favorably. And there was quite a commotion about their incarceration, and a large mob formed outside the jail where they were held and protested their incarceration.
And this indeed was the first racial uprising in Detroit, wasn't it?
Different publications have, I think those things are hard to document, mm-hmm. but it was cited as the first, I think the phrase was insurrection in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, then what happened? How did they escape and wind up being able to get to Ontario?
This was not only a spontaneous action, this uprising. There had been a case a couple of years earlier where two Kentucky slaves had been captured by slave catchers. And after they were rescued by a crowd of African Americans and African Canadians who came across the river to help. And after that, I think the communities on both sides of the river joined to plan what they would do if something happened. Because as soon as the Blackburns were tried before Judge Chipman in the Wayne County Court, the court filled with black people coming in and packing the balcony and armed to the teeth. And when the word came down that the Blackburns were going to be sent back to slavery, they swore they would burn Detroit to the ground if the Blackburns were returned to their former owners. So the sheriff, instead of giving them over to the slave catchers, put them in the town jail, which is where the Skillman branch of the Detroit Public Library is today, by the way.
Huh.
That next day, two women came to see Mrs. Blackburn. It was Sunday. They were dressed in their church clothes, and they came to see the sheriff and ask if they could sit with Mrs. Blackburn in the jail and pray with her in their farewell. And they waited till nightfall and then covered their faces with their veils and went off down the darkened streets, weeping into their handkerchiefs. And, of course, it wasn't until the next morning that the jailer realized that one of the women had been Lucy Blackburn, and by that time she was across the river in Canada.
Wow.
She changed clothes with Mrs. Caroline French, who was actually endangered. They talked about taking her to Kentucky and selling her instead. But fortunately, her husband got rid of habeas corpus and rescued her. But the next morning, the Monday, Thornton was brought to the door of the jail, and he was in chains because they didn't want to lose the second part of their bounty, right?
Mm.
And up the street came a crowd of more than 200 angry, yelling people armed. There were also white people involved. Not everybody in Detroit agreed with this at all. And they pulled Thornton into a cart and took him off in a wild ride towards the river. And seven of his rescuers, seven young men, went with him across to Canada. But the mayor of Detroit had sent a letter to the sheriff of the Western District of Upper Canada saying that the Blackburns had committed capital crimes. They had tried to kill the sheriff, who was indeed beaten during the melee, but not by the Blackburns. Also, they had aroused civil unrest. So they didn't accuse them of being fugitive slaves, which is important because escaping from slavery wasn't illegal in Canada. They accused them of capital crimes, which were worthy of extradition.
And how was that letter responded to?
The Lieutenant Governor of Upper Canada was Sir John Colborne, and he was an abolitionist. He had no intention of sending them back, but he was looking for a diplomatic solution. So he had his attorney general examine the laws relating to British colonial slavery, which was just on the verge of ending. This was July 1833. Britain would pass the Imperial Act abolishing slavery in the whole British Empire in August of 1833, and then it would become effective the next August. Everybody knew it was over, right?
Right.
So Attorney General Robert Simpson Jameson came up with a solution. He said, Canada cannot return an accused criminal to a jurisdiction where the punishment for the crime of which they're accused is harsher than our laws would allow. Since whether or not the Blackburns were judged guilty in a American court, they would still be returned to slavery. And enslavement was not a punishment for any crime under the British colonial law of Canada. Canada could not send them back for trial.
So that was a very deft legal solution. That was a real legal gotcha.
And do you realize that that is the basis of Canadian extradition law to this day?
Mm.
We still use that legislation. It's not called the same thing, but this is the precedent on which all of Canadian history of extradition has been based.
And then it seems the Blackburn case, that was the first time Canada really did throw down the gauntlet and declare that Canada is a safe haven for fugitive slaves, which I guess that helped firm up the Underground Railroad because everybody knew where they wanted to get to.
This was the case that made it a legal haven,
mm-hmm.
that ensured protection.
You know, I think what else is interesting, this is only 2 years after the Nat Turner uprising and rebellion. So here we are way off in the backwaters, quote unquote, of Michigan,
yeah.
just 2 years later and having similar rebellion in this respect and much more complicated legally. And
yes.
setting up that network that you just spoke of.
Amazing. And the Blackburns then wound up moving to Toronto in 1834. And Carolyn, what was Toronto like back then?
Well, it was a small British colonial town that was on the verge of great things. It had just become a city. It had been the town of York for a long time. It was renamed by the native Canadian name of Toronto at that year. And Thornton came and went to work as a waiter in the dining room of the law courts at Osgoode Hall, which is still standing.
Hmm.
And he and his wife built a little house, which I didn't realize for years after we did the archaeological dig on their home, that was a shotgun house on the Kentucky model in the southeastern part of the city. And within 2 years, they had come to hear, I imagine Thornton listening to lawyers in the dining room, discovered that there was a new kind of public transportation that had just arrived from England in Montreal, and that was a hackney cab. And Thornton got someone to write a letter, because he and his wife were never able to read or write throughout their whole lives, got someone to write a letter to Montreal, got the design, and had a cab built. And they painted it yellow with red trim and called it the City. And that was the first form of public transportation in Canada west of Montreal.
Isn't that something?
He retired from the cab business in about the time of the Civil War. He did something else that linked with Detroit. He did something remarkable in early 1837. He took the Underground Railroad in reverse. He went back to Detroit, and with help from the community there, he traveled all that long way through Michigan and on through Ohio to the banks of the Ohio River, and he rescued his mother, Sibby Blackburn, from whom he had been sold away when he was 3 years old.
Okay, you couldn't script this.
Sounds like a movie.
It truly does.
From your lips to God's ears.
So he got her to safety in Canada as well.
Yep, and she's buried in the Toronto Necropolis Cemetery with her son.
Mm. And I know, Carolyn, you mentioned you were part of the archaeological excavation of their home in the mid-'80s. What kind of public reaction did that draw?
You know, that was the first Underground Railroad site ever dug in Canada, was the Thornton and Lucy Blackburn site, and it got more publicity than any dig in Canadian history after Louisburg.
Well, we want to thank you both so much for sharing this very harrowing and fascinating story of Michigan and Ontario's past. Mark Harvey with the Michigan History Center, and Carolyn Smarts Frost, whose book about the Blackburns is I've Got a Home in Glory Land, A Lost Tale of the Underground Railroad. It was great to talk to both of you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.